The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
So let's talk about more of the important things in our lives now. Angela Scanlon, good morning to you in London.
Good morning. I loved that chat. I just caught the end of it. But yeah, totally agree with all your texters in. It's good to hear.
Have you turned to prayer yourself?
I don't think I've turned to prayer in the traditional sense that I, as an Irish woman, would think of. But I definitely have turned inwards. I've hit meditation in a big way. So yeah, prayer of a different type than what I grew up with, maybe. But yeah, I feel much more spiritual than I've ever been.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, you have a new show on BBC Two, Your Garden Made Perfect. So let's talk about
yes.
that. Let's talk about that in a minute. So, and let's talk about your own spiritual journey. So, because you have a podcast series which is called Thanks a Million, and it's about
That's
gratitude,
right.
which I know people are very into the gratitude now, and I know it's supposed to be great, and I've loads to be grateful for, but I find it's quite hard actually to practice gratitude, isn't it?
It is actually. It's a muscle, I think, that needs constant flexing. And I think once you kind of spend time doing that and commit to doing it every day, which, I mean, to be honest, I have kind of tried all of these different weird and wonderful shiny promises of fixing me, quote unquote, fixing me.
Oh, yeah, go on, like what?
Oh, like gong baths and infrared saunas. And,
hang on, just slow down now. What's a gong bath?
So a gong bath is where they use I say this as if I've rubbished all of those. I actually really like these and I'm interested in this kind of stuff. But gong bath is about, it's bathing in sound. So it's certain frequencies of sound. So you lie down. It was described as meditation for lazy people. So you essentially lie down and bathe in sound. And it's very relaxing and very calming.
I can imagine.
It's lovely. But I did try lots of different things.
What else?
And gratitude. Oh, what else? Infrared saunas, they're kind of different. What else have I tried? Psych K, which is like an energy kind of thing that apparently gets rid of trauma in the body. I've done, you know, Reiki, the more usual alternative therapies. So yeah, there's quite a list and there's quite a sum that has been spent over the years.
So which one worked?
In the pursuit of happiness.
Given that tried them all now, tell people which one worked.
Well, that's what I was getting to, is gratitude works. And I kind of threw it out the window. I was like, well, it's not shiny, it's not expensive, it's free, actually, which meant I kind of took it for granted or maybe underestimated it. Or in a way, I was kind of seduced by these things that promised an overnight fix. And gratitude, much like, you know, the kind of, it's like being told by a doctor that in order to get fit, you just need to move a bit and eat a bit less. And that's like, nobody wants to hear that. They want to be told that the keto diet is the sexy thing to do and that's shiny and it will fix them overnight. And so I think we're less inclined to do the things that are moderate and that require consistency and that require commitment. And so gratitude was one of those things that I would come back to, and I kind of discovered years and years ago, and I'd do it and I'd feel it and I would feel the effects of it in my life in terms of the way my perception shifted, in terms of what came into my life and my how happy I felt, I suppose, or not. And it was the thing I came back to.
I saw you say somewhere in an interview that positivity is not your default setting and that you have to work on it, which I think a lot of us could identify with.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not. And I think I kind of slightly smirk and giggle now when people are like, she's the bubbly Irish presenter. Mm-hmm. I'm like, bubbly, you know, and I think that's probably how I present. And it maybe is my natural setting. And then, you know, life comes along and batters you around a bit. And we all have our own versions of that. And I think I spent a very long time being quite numb, if I'm honest, and kind of dialing down those. I'm a very sensitive human, and so I think I dialed down all of the feelings to kind of protect myself, and I realised that I wasn't feeling very much of anything, and that I was pouring myself into work. I was I know we talked about this on your chat show before. There was a kind of, it was often remarked on the drive and this kind of ambition that I had have and where that came from. And it was, you know, in truth, not the healthiest of approaches. And it was a kind of quite an addictive thing for me, and it was a pursuit of, it was something that I was looking for to fill me up when I didn't feel that. And so I thought I would kind of create these lists, I would seek these bigger things, these outlandish kind of goals that seemed so stretched and so impossible. And then sometimes I would land on those and I would feel nothing. And so that was an absolute shocker to arrive. And this was in my mid-30s, to have gotten some of these things that I had kind of created, been lucky enough to be given opportunities to do the things that I believed for years would make me arrive at some sort of sense of contentment or satisfaction, and then to feel absolutely nothing and realize that that wasn't going to fix me or fill me up was pretty hard to stomach, I suppose. So yeah, each time
the disappointment, the familiar but surprising disappointment would come. Did the kind of breakthrough happen for you? I know you started going to actual therapy after your daughter Ruby was born. Was that the breakthrough
for you? Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think if I'm honest, I was kind of looking for it for a very long time. And again, I didn't commit. I kind of, you know, thought, oh, no, I'm busy and my work takes me away, and all of the excuses not to commit to doing something that would help me, really. And yeah, and it was kind of, in a way, you know, the thing that I wouldn't give myself, I was determined to give her. And I kind of thought, I don't want to, you know, even when she came along and like a gorgeous baby, and I felt, you know, again, that familiar sense of, oh, Jesus, everyone around me feels this little bubble and they talk about this love. And I know, obviously, that's like the Instagram version of becoming a new mother or a new parent. But actually, there was a kind of sense that I was missing something, that was something broken in me, that I wasn't feeling this wild surge of love. And it was the realization that I had turned all of my emotions down, and so I obviously had lost my connection with the ability to feel the good ones if I had ignored the bad ones for so long. So it was kind of out of necessity, really, that I turned to therapy. And I had dabbled with it a very long time ago for a brief period, but it was more an exercise in optics than anything else. And this time it was with absolute commitment, from a place that I believed I couldn't run away from myself anymore, you know. So it was like a slight my version, if you want, of a rock bottom, I suppose. But I mean, I feel wildly different now, and more, I suppose, more compassionate towards myself. I don't think of myself as some wild working machine that needs to produce every hour on the hour. And I try to, I suppose I try to exercise a bit of presence. And I talk about looking ahead, moving on to the next thing, and kind of never really feeling anything. And so I'm very, I suppose committed to living in the moment now, because this is it. And, you know, my dad says, you could be dead tomorrow, which feels like a little too close to home for everybody at the moment. But that kind of sense of being a bit more in contact and a bit more aware of your own mortality suddenly gives you a bit more perspective, maybe.
Yeah. So then it must have been challenging enough, though, then, when this additional thing of this pandemic came along, and presumably you were largely trapped in London for the last year. Yeah. So how was that?
In a way, it was amazing because I had kind of created this version of my reality, which required me to be going and doing and dancing and running. And suddenly, you know, I kind of laugh about the idea that only a government house arrest would stop me from working. And so I was forced to stay at home. I was forced to kind of have and create a routine. And that felt like a gift to me. And I kind of started to to really get an appreciation for those smaller things that previously I would have dismissed as pedestrian or mundane. You know, I kind of was forced to really recognize that those are the important things, as trite as that sounds. And yeah, so in a way, like, and it was very difficult in that there was a lot of things going on at home, and the sense of distance when there's things happening with your family on the other side of a little sea.
Yeah, that's so, like, and you're so close as well in one way.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of have always been over and back, and I've always had that kind of sense of a foot in both camps, and I've never really left Ireland. And so that kind of idea that you couldn't nip home to be there when you were needed, and for loads of different reasons. And that, yeah, that was difficult, but it also kind of created, yeah, like a little, it fenced me in a bit, and that wasn't necessarily a bad thing for me at the time.
Yeah. You came home for Christmas, I see. So you had to do that 2 weeks of isolation and everything.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah. It was grand. We stayed in my Roy's cousin's place, actually. So, yeah, we drove home. We hid out, we ate and we slept, and I was doing a bit of writing and trying to work with the 2-year-old like everybody else. And yeah, and we did it. And actually, do you know what? We felt at the time, it kind of felt like a very dramatic thing to do. And I obviously realised in a very privileged position in that we could both work from from anywhere pretty much at the time. And I was able to do my podcast from there and radio stuff from there. So that was, you know, the upside of it. But at the time I thought, okay, we're leaving, you know, on the at the beginning of December. And that felt a bit mad. But then when this, you know, second strain broke, and the origin was in England, and London was kind of deemed to be this mutant home, I felt very grateful that we had done everything the right way, if you like, which allowed us to spend a bit of time with family after so long without the kind of fear. And obviously we did everything as carefully as we could and properly, but yeah, that kind of sense that you felt like you had done the right thing, not that you were just
aren't you glad now, because obviously it's a pity everyone who came home from England didn't behave like that. And listen, in terms of work, then people will remember of course that just when it all started, you were going to be spending more time back here, because you were just starting recording a Saturday Night Chat Show for RTE, weren't you?
That is right, yeah. So I remember, actually, one of the last chats I had was with Sarah, and it was about to launch, and we had done, I don't know whether that was the dry run, but yeah, we had 2 episodes recorded, and there was this talk, you know, of COVID, which seemed very alien at the time. And we all kind of assumed we'd be back in a couple of weeks when things blew over. And yeah, a year later, we're still not there. So yeah, it was a big, it was a disappointment. You know, there was a kind of momentum there. We were all ready to go, an amazing team. Everyone had worked really hard. I'd kind of poured myself into it. And and then for it just to stop. But look, obviously that was overshadowed and put into
perspective. Yeah, of course, first world problem. But still, it's
first world problem
happening to you at the same time. But you hope to get that back up and running at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that the conversations, and there was a kind of, you know, suggestion that we might get back in like now-ish in the next couple of months. And then I think from a health and safety perspective, that was never going to happen. There's an audience element to the show that's pretty important. And so, yeah, right, we're kind of looking at later in the year, but with a, you know, we'll see what happens. So I'm kind of, I have no doubt that it will happen, and that there's a desire for it to happen on both sides, but sure, who knows?
Yeah, look, we all have to live with a bit of uncertainty right now, don't we?
For
our sanity. Yeah. But listen,
and I think it's that's quite unnatural for me.
to let go to a bit of uncertainty, yeah?
Totally.
Yeah, but that's the old Angela. So, the new Angela now is open
I'm
to the universe.
I'm a monk now, Brent.
Yeah.
Surrendering to the universe. Yeah.
But listen, your career continues to thrive over in the UK. And so you had a show, Your Home Made, Perfect with Robert Jemison was one of the architects on it. I loved
That's
him. We had
right.
him on the
he
show.
He was on
he's
with
great.
You, wasn't
yeah,
he, a couple
great.
Of months ago?
Yeah. So now your new show is called Your Garden Made Perfect. Is this basically because you couldn't go into people's houses, so you
no, went
to their garden
kind
instead?
Kind of, but actually we have a new series of Your Homemade Perfect coming in a couple of months' time. But Your Garden was kind of, we could do that in a kind of safely, socially distant way. I think maybe lockdown has made people understand and appreciate the value of the little patch they might have outside their back doors. And so it just felt like a very kind of timely thing to do and to use the virtual reality in the same way that it's
been used.
And
just explain to people how the show works. You can have your little plug.
Yeah, so essentially it's, you know, a homeowner, we go in, there's two designers, well actually in this series there's four designers, but there's two battling against each other, a little dramatic. Virtual reality, they create two designs for the person, they pop on the goggles and they kind of stand in the garden as it would appear finished, and then they get to choose one and then we build it. I mean, build it, dig it. Create it. So it's started on Thursday night, BBC Two, 8 o'clock, and has thankfully gone down a little storm.
Okay. Listen, there's a lot of people texting in garden questions, so I'll just throw you some garden questions then, will I?
Oh, hit me with it. Yeah, go on.
No, I wouldn't do that to you.
I might be exposed. Yeah. I'm the voice of the people, Brendan. I'm not Dermot Gavin.
Exactly. You're there to ask the dumb questions. I understand.
Exactly. Okay. With pride. Yeah.
Listen, before you go, there's another thing here I see you do. Just this might be something that people could do today to jolly themselves along. Tell me about kitchen dancing.
Oh, I love a bit of kitchen dancing. Actually, I've taken to dance. I used to do Irish dancing religiously. And then I forget. You forget to be like a bit free, don't you? And then I've observed Ruby dancing, and bless her, like there's not much rhythm there. But there's a glorious sense of like a total lack of self-consciousness. And it just inspires me to go a bit nuts. So we whack on the radio and dance around. We also do naked dancing, but that's a whole other thing. Just let rip. I love it.
Okay, yeah. I think everyone should build a bit of that into the day.
I think so too.
I'm thinking about Roy here. So is Roy is he the stable one in all this, putting up with mummy's latest fads, kitchen dancing and gong bats and all this?
I resent that. There's arguably I'm the stable one, Brendan, because I'm more in tune with my needs.
That's true.
But yeah, he looks more stable from the outside. And he's from Cork, so you know yourself. He knows everything.
Yeah, absolutely. They're the ones you have to watch. Okay.
Exactly.
Listen. What's the plan from here anyway? What are you doing next?
Next, well, Your Homemade Perfect out in the summertime, and then don't know really. We've five more eps of this, and then the podcast. I know you mentioned it. It's called Thanks a Million, and we've three series of that out. So still doing that, and loads of fab guests. I should have you on, Brendan. Would you come on to it?
So listen, I didn't mean to put you under pressure there, but what are you doing next? You sounded then as if you felt you had to justify yourself. But anyway, I meant what are you doing next in the career? But then I thought, it was kind of a bit like your father saying to you, have you got a job lined up or what? Would you not get a
totally.
good job in the bank?
I've loads of stuff in the pipeline. Pipeline. Podcast really is the thing that I'm doing that is in my control, you know, which is nice. Have a listen to that. It's called Thanks a Million. Come on. And then apart from that, I'm just going with the flow, keep my head above water and hoping for the best.
Can't say better than that. Okay, Angela Scanlon, thanks a million. Let's take a break.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.